Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are tackling something pretty significant.
We are. It's Sundeep Mehra's Awakened Leadership Decision Framework.
Exactly. And it's not just, you know, another management trend. It's quite radical, really.
It poses a fundamental question about how we make choices. Leaders, organizations, even nations.
Yeah, and it starts by pointing out this paradox, right? We're swimming in information.
Absolutely drowning in it. Endless data, expert analysis, reports.
Billions spent on intelligence gathering.
And yet, look around. The world still feels incredibly turbulent. There's fracture, a real crisis of trust.
That's the core setup from the source material, isn't it? The argument is that the problem isn't a lack of plans or data.
Not at all. It's that the critical moment, the point of decision.
Right.
Well, you can't just outsource that to a spreadsheet or an algorithm.
It comes down to the leader. And crucially, where that decision comes from inside them.
Precisely. Is it a reaction, born out of fear, political pressure, just trying to survive?
Or does it come from somewhere deeper, like presence, responsibility, a sense of alignment?
That's the heart of it. So our mission today is to unpack this framework, this internal global compass, as Mehra calls it.
A global compass. I like that.
It shifts the whole game away from just crunching external numbers.
Which we do endlessly.
Towards cultivating an internal state. Clarity. Coherence.
So moving from models obsessed with predicting outcomes to something based on, what were the terms? Clarity, consequence, and systemic resonance.
Yes. It forces leaders to ask, what's the inner state driving this action? It's a profound shift in the starting point.
Okay, let's dig into that starting point difference. Conventional models, they're mostly transactional, right?
Very much so. Inputs, outputs, cause and effect, optimization. Looking for the best possible outcome based on available data.
But this awakened framework, it seems to define success differently. It's not just about the immediate ROI or the poll numbers.
It's about the integrity of the origin of the decision. Was it born from that place of fear or political game? Or from something more aligned, maybe a sense of purpose.
That internal source becomes the absolute key.
It's the defining feature. And the framework isn't presented as like an optional add-on tool.
No, it's positioned as the fundamental ground an awakened leader stands on.
Right. It asserts that the consciousness behind the choice, the intention, the presence, that's what actually shapes destiny. It gives the decision weight, durability, ethical resonance.
Which, when you contrast it with how things often work, it is radical. Conventional governance is often about managing external factors.
Trying to control the variables out there.
And this framework says essentially, hold on, you can't effectively manage the external until you've sorted out the internal.
It's about achieving what the source calls coherence.
Coherence. What does that mean in practice here?
It means the decision isn't just intellectually sound, ticking all the boxes on paper. It has to be an embodied choice.
Embodied, meaning felt. Lived.
Yes. It cuts through the complexity because it has this internal integrity. It aligns not just with immediate targets, but with, well, the bigger picture, human systems, maybe even evolution.
So a choice becomes more than just a choice. It's a kind of transmission.
Exactly. Something that resonates beyond the meeting room or the government building. It carries further.
Okay. So to understand how this coherence actually happens, we need to look at the structure. The framework uses four pillars.
Four interdependent pillars, yes. They're described almost like living stations of alignment.
Stations you have to pass through.
That's the idea. They form a path, taking you from that initial inner vision all the way to putting something out into the world. Manifestation.
Think of it like a filtering process.
That's a good analogy. At each pillar, the decision gets tested, refined, grounded. The aim is to ensure that by the time it becomes action, it hasn't been distorted by fear or ego or just noise.
And the source stresses that they're interdependent. You can't just pick and choose.
Absolutely crucial. If one pillar is weak or you skip it entirely.
The decision loses something vital.
Precisely. For example, you might have a brilliant inner vision, but if you don't ground it in the next pillar, heart-centered alignment, maybe it lacks courage or balance, it won't land properly.
The whole structure seems designed to prevent those kinds of failures in the chain.
Exactly. Which brings us logically to pillar one, inner vision.
Right. This is positioned as the source of real clarity.
We're constantly bombarded, aren't we? Signals everywhere, data, research, what people say, our own memories, pressures.
Information overload.
Inner vision is presented as the point where all those signals don't just pile up. They actually transform into genuine clarity, into direction.
So it's where analysis potentially becomes wisdom.
You could say that. The source material uses some quite vivid, almost esoteric language here.
Yeah, I noticed that. It talks about inner vision operating at a higher frequency. It mentions the indigo thread, the violet flame. What are we meant to take from that? How does regular intelligence become awakened intelligence?
Well, the colors seem to function as mnemonics, signifiers for the quality of awareness. Indigo and violet often represent higher states, perception beyond the purely rational or ego-driven.
Beyond just survival instincts or immediate reactions.
Exactly. Practically speaking, it means a leader isn't just compiling facts anymore. They start listening differently, listening for the essential truth that's left when the noise fades.
Hmm. Discerning the signal from the noise, but on a deeper level.
Yes. It's the ability to see the underlying pattern, the meaning, not just the surface data.
Can we make that more concrete?
Yeah.
How does inner vision apply to something really big, like a nation?
Okay, for a nation, the framework suggests its inner vision isn't the latest opinion poll or the current political squabble.
It's something more fundamental.
It's the nation's foundational truth. Its constitution, maybe its core moral compass, the principles it was founded upon. Think about current global turbulence.
Okay.
If a major national decision is made purely based on, say, short-term economic data or polling.
External signals.
But it fundamentally contradicts the nation's core stated values like justice or freedom or equality, then even if it seems politically smart in the moment, the framework predicts it will ultimately create chaos.
Because it lacks that anchor in Pillar One. It's disconnected from the source vision.
Precisely. So when you see nations becoming deeply fragmented, deeply polarized.
It might be a symptom of losing that shared inner vision. Leaders are just reacting to the latest crisis or tweet.
That's the argument. They've lost touch with the foundational charter. And it applies to organizations, too.
How so? What's the inner vision for a company? It can't just be profit.
According to this framework, definitely not. The inner vision is the organization's living ethos, its heartbeat. Its actual reason for existing, which should be deeper than just the bottom line.
Even if profit is necessary for survival.
Of course. Right. But if decisions are only driven by profit charts, what happens? Strategies become fragmented. People lose clarity. They just feel like cogs serving a spreadsheet.
Instead of contributing to a larger purpose.
Right. There's no central magnetic truth holding it all together.
Okay, that connects back to the chaos Mara mentioned. If this first filter, inner vision, is blocked or ignored, the whole system downstream gets distorted input.
It does. Yeah. And the actionable step here, well, is probably the toughest one for modern leaders.
Which is?
It requires remembering who you are as a leader, as an organization, as a nation, especially when under immense pressure.
Facing that fear of collapse, financial, political, whatever, and standing firm in the knowing of what must be done.
That's the essence of it. It's a deep internal resolve.
And this commitment, this inner vision, then informs how you interact with the world. The source mentions awakened diplomacy. That term sounds lofty. What does it mean practically?
Awakened diplomacy would mean starting negotiations not from a position of maximizing tactical advantage.
Which is pretty standard.
But from a place of recognizing shared foundational human values. That pillar one truth.
So instead of how do I win this negotiation, the question becomes,
what's the essential truth here that needs to be honored for both our systems, both our peoples, to find coherence and thrive? It's about seeking systemic resilience, the common good first.
That requires a huge internal shift before you even sit down at the table.
It's an internal commitment that precedes the external action, yes. A commitment rooted in that clear inner vision.
A tough commitment. Okay, so once that clarity, that inner vision is established, the framework says it needs to move. It travels to pillar two. heart-centered alignment.
Yes. If vision provides the direction, you could say the heart provides the origin and the grounding.
The origin? Explain that.
It's about ensuring the decision doesn't just come from the head, from intellectual agreement with the vision. It needs to take root in origin, meaning it comes from the core essence, the authentic self or system identity, not from a reaction to external events or past traumas or fears. Reaction is driven by the outside. Origin is driven by the true inside.
Okay, so it protects the purity of the vision.
That's a good way to think of it. Vision establishes the what. Heart-centered alignment establishes the why and ensures it's coming from the right place.
They call it the grounding axis, the still point, the home of identity, authenticity, purpose. Mm. For an organization, is this where the mission statement stops being words on a wall and becomes the lived reality, the core values actually driving behavior?
Exactly that. It's the internal compass, the GPS. It ensures that even when things get incredibly stressful, market crashes, scandals, intense pressure,
the leader, or the system itself, can return to its true center. It doesn't get totally swept away.
And this is symbolized by the green corridor.
The green corridor, what does that represent?
It's described as this internal space of peace, a place where decisions aren't forced through fear, but are welcomed with love, courage, clarity, and trust.
Love. That's a word you don't often hear in leadership frameworks.
No, but here it seems to mean a deep care for the system, its people, its purpose. It's about balancing emotion and strategy, ensuring conscience isn't bulldozed by tactics.
Preventing the short-term win from erasing the long-term integrity.
Precisely. Keeping that connection to the core alive.
But here's a potential challenge. If you define an organization's or a nation's identity, its heart, too rigidly, doesn't that risk becoming ideological? Or just inflexible when the world is changing so fast?
That's a really important question. The framework seems to anticipate this. It argues the danger isn't in having a center, but in having a false center, one based on ego, ideology, or past conditioning.
So a true heart-centered alignment isn't rigid ideology.
It's presented as more existential. It connects the system to fundamental truth that often transcends specific cultures or moments, things like the inherent worth of people, the need for sustainability, the value of justice. Mm-hmm. These provide a stable yet adaptable core.
Okay, so let's take an example. A nation's inner vision might be freedom.
Right.
Heart-centered alignment would then ensure that actual policies on speech, on movement, on the economy genuinely manifest that freedom courageously.
Instead of contracting into, say, fearful protectionist measures that might feel safe short term but actually betray that core value of freedom.
Yeah, okay. And consequences of not doing this, of skipping pillar two or having a misaligned heart.
The source is quite stark here. Leaders without this center get consumed by the external noise. They become hyper-reactive, bouncing from one crisis to the next.
And the system itself.
It loses its way. It drifts into contradiction. Think about companies that trumpet innovation in their values.
But then punish every single failure, every experiment that doesn't immediately pay off.
Exactly. That's systemic misalignment.
Yeah.
The heart, the operational reality, is betraying the stated vision. There's no courage, no trust.
And the source claims this betrayal, this lack of heart-centeredness, leads to fracture, to collapse.
It argues it does, eventually. Because people aren't stupid. Employees, citizens, they see the actions. They feel the disconnect between the words and the deeds.
If leadership says A, vision, but consistently acts from B, fearful reaction.
Trust evaporates. Legitimacy erodes. For a system, this misalignment is like betraying its own constitution or its cultural heartbeat. It creates deep internal conflict.
But decisions made from this centered place,
they gain resilience. They gain integrity. They remain anchored even when everything outside is chaotic. The heart acts as the anchor in the storm, tethering action back to its moral origin. It makes clarity possible even in motion.
All right, so we have direction from inner vision, grounded in origin by heart-centered alignment. That brings us to pillar three, life's essence.
Yes, and this pillar is about energy, movement, vitality.
If the first two set the stage, this one provides the current, the engine.
Exactly. It's the current that carries the vision and the heart forward into actual motion, into the dynamic reality of the world.
Why is this necessary? Isn't having a clear vision and a grounded heart enough?
Because reality isn't static. This pillar forces the leader, the system, to engage with the fact that existence is constantly changing, evolving, creating. It's not a fixed problem to be solved.
It's a living process.
A living, breathing, dynamic process. Life's essence provides the vitality needed for the decision to adapt, to flow, to stay relevant.
The source uses the metaphor of the orange enigma. Orange, vibrant, creative, maybe a bit unpredictable.
I think that's the sense. Vast, dynamic, inexhaustibly creative, like the universe itself. It emphasizes that things are never truly still or fixed. There's always possibility.
This sounds like a direct challenge to traditional control-oriented management. The idea that you can plan everything out perfectly 5 years in advance.
Oh, absolutely. Pillar three is where the illusion of total control really gets dismantled.
How so?
This is where the idea of co-creation comes alive. Instead of seeing ourselves as masters trying to impose our will on a static reality,
we become participants.
Active, conscious participants in an endlessly creative unfolding. When decisions are made from this place, they're free from the weight of past failures or the anxiety of trying to perfectly predict the future.
They're alive to the creative potential of now.
That's the key, alive to the now.
So leadership shifts again. It's less about prediction, which is often.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Often just, you know, sophisticated worrying.
Huh. That's a good way to put it.
And more about making a quality contribution to the present moment.
Precisely. Instead of desperately trying to lock down market share for Q4 2028, the focus is on contributing something vital, adaptive, and aligned right now, trusting that this will shape the future constructively.
And if a leader or an organization resists this, if they cling to rigid plans,
they deny life's essence. The source says the system becomes brittle when inevitable disruption hits a new technology, a social shift, a pandemic.
The rigid structure snaps.
Whereas organizations that embody life's essence, they adapt, they flex. Like living organisms, they evolve with their people, with the demands of the time, they find resilience.
So pillar three is where resilience really comes from. It's about embracing the messiness, the paradoxes, the contradictions inherent in complexity.
Yes, and accepting that it's okay. The decision doesn't have to be perfect in a static sense. It needs to be alive, responsive, able to learn.
It's about systemic aliveness.
Think about a government agency designed decades ago for a specific, fixed purpose. Society changes, needs shift dramatically.
And the rigid structure often fails to adapt. It becomes irrelevant or even obstructive.
But an awakened system, embodying life's essence, would have built-in ways to sense and respond dynamically. Policy becomes more like an evolving experiment, rooted in the vision and heart, but constantly learning.
Less like a sacred text, more like a living document.
Exactly. Decisions born here aren't trying to guarantee or lock down the future. That's seen as an illusion anyway. They are conscious contributions to its unfolding. This pillar holds ambiguity.
It sounds like this is also where learning happens. If a decision flows with life's essence, then a setback isn't a disaster.
It's feedback. Information for the next creative step. It keeps the energy of the system flowing, prevents stagnation.
And this relies heavily on the first two pillars being strong.
Absolutely. If you have that clarity of vision and you're rooted in your heart's alignment, you have the courage and stability to navigate the uncertainty of the present, the orange enigma. You can move forward without needing all the answers up front.
Trusting the process itself.
That trust, grounded in the prior pillars, is what unlocks the collective creativity and adaptability within the system.
Okay, we've journeyed through vision, heart, and essence direction, origin, vitality. Now we land at the final pillar, the point of action. Pillar four, materiality.
This is it, where the rubber meets the road, as you said earlier. The place of embodiment.
The red gateway.
Right. Red often symbolizing grounding, action, the physical world. It's where all the internal work, the ideas, the visions, the alignments finally gets released into tangible reality.
And the source makes a strong claim here. Nothing fully exists until it's embodied.
It's the ultimate test. An idea is just an idea until it changes something in the material world.
Why call it a gateway? And why red, specifically? We had indigo violet for higher frequency, green for peace. Red feels more urgent, grounded, maybe even a warning.
I think it signifies both the grounding and the potential danger. It's the immediate reality check. The framework points out that in conventional systems, embodiment often happens unconsciously or automatically. The structures are there, laws, budgets, corporate policies.
But the energy flowing through them might not be aligned.
Exactly. Without that awakened clarity from the first three pillars, the energy driving the action can be dormant, misdirected, scattered, or even harmful.
And this is where the source uses some really potent language about the failure modes. It says unawakened materiality, blind action, can leak into violence, addiction, manipulation. How does a failure here become, say, organizational addiction?
Well, think about what addiction is. A compulsive seeking of short-term relief or reward, regardless of long-term consequences.
Okay.
If a system hasn't done the work of pillars 1, 2, and 3, its energy defaults to seeking quick, tangible fixes in the material world. For a company, that could mean addiction to quarterly earnings bumps, even if it requires manipulating metrics.
Or burning out employees or cutting corners ethically.
Precisely. Actions that violate the core vision or heart, but provide that immediate material hit. It's focusing purely on the doing without the aligned being.
And violence or manipulation.
In this context, it could mean trying to force the external world to conform to the unexamined internal decision, rather than adapting or co-creating, using power or resources to push through a misaligned agenda.
So materiality, when awakened, isn't just about doing stuff. It's a conscious filter.
Exactly. A conscious gateway. It's not just execution. It's responsible transmission.
It requires discipline.
Tremendous discipline. Knowing what to release into action, when the timing is right, and how to release it in a way that maintains the coherence established upstream.
So for a government, it's not just having a policy on paper. It's about ensuring the implementation, the actual enforcement on the ground, is just as aligned and conscious.
Yes. Turning dormant structures into truly conscious governance. Shifting organizations from strategies gathering dust on shelves to a lived culture with tangible, aligned outcomes.
This really implies a deep cultural shift. It has to permeate the whole system. It can't just be the CEO having the vision.
It's the final test for the entire sequence. Any flaw upstream, a shaky vision, a fear-based motive in the heart, a lack of adaptability, in essence, it will likely show up here in the action or its consequences.
But if the decision has made it through all four pillars intact,
the action taken in materiality is inherently more robust, authentic, and resistant to manipulation. It ensures the physical manifestation matches the inner clarity. It guards the gate.
We've walked through the four pillars now. Let's try to synthesize this. What really makes the awakened framework stand apart from conventional decision-making models?
I think the core difference comes down to sequencing and priority.
How so?
Conventional models typically start with the external, gather data, analyze options, predict outcomes, then choose the path that optimizes for the desired result.
Maximizing gain, minimizing risk, based on external factors.
Right. The awakened framework flips the sequence. It privileges origin integrity first.
The inner state comes before the outer calculation.
Exactly. Data, expertise, process, they're still vital. The framework doesn't discard them, but they become tools used by a clarified center, interpreted through that lens.
And then released into action via conscious materiality.
The sequence is paramount. Choices are formed in presence, grounded in heart, energized by life, before they hit the strategy document or the spreadsheet.
I'm really starting to grasp why the sources claim this leads to decisions that hold up better under pressure.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you can always poke holes in a calculated outcome, right?
Yeah.
Circumstances change, data was incomplete, the model is flawed.
Always.
But it seems much harder to destabilize a decision rooted in a deep, embodied sense of truth and purpose. It has an internal anchor.
That's the idea. The result is a decision that carries coherence across different timescales, the immediate crisis, the medium-term strategy, and even generational impact. It grounds the choice, keeps it alive, and makes it ethically accountable.
It aims to tackle that turbulence we started with by addressing the source of the problematic decisions, not just managing the fallout.
Healing the source, not just treating the symptoms, yes.
Okay, this leads us naturally to the really big claims the source material makes about why this framework is so important right now.
Yes, there's a sense of urgency. It argues humanity is at a kind of decisive edge.
Facing multiple crises, trust, complexity, ecological limits. and technology racing ahead of our wisdom.
Especially technology. The framework is positioned as particularly crucial for AI governance.
Why AI specifically?
Well, think about what AI is brilliant at. Processing vast amounts of data, optimizing complex systems for a given objective, operating at incredible speed.
The ultimate tool for calculation and execution. Pillars 1 and 4, maybe.
It can certainly handle the signals part of Pillar 1 and the action part of Pillar 4. But here's the critical risk. What is the objective we give the AI?
If the goal we feed the super optimizer is itself misaligned.
If it's rooted in fear or pure profit motive divorced from ethics or nationalistic competition without a sense of shared humanity, then the AI will optimize us towards that misaligned goal with terrifying efficiency.
Driving us faster towards chaos, potentially.
That's the concern. The framework argues we must install pillars 1, inner vision, and 2, heart-centered alignment in our governance structures before we hand over too much power to AI systems operating primarily at pillar 4, materiality.
The AI can run the calculations, but it can't determine the foundational truth or the ethical grounding. Humans have to provide that coherence.
It's that crucial bridge. Only an awakened human consciousness, the argument goes, can provide the clear, coherent, life-affirming objectives that AI needs to serve systemic resilience and evolution rather than fragmentation or destruction.
Without that, we risk creating incredibly powerful systems aimed at incoherent or even dangerous ends.
Which brings us to perhaps the most audacious claim of all.
Oh, wow.
The framework is described in the source as potentially the only architecture humanity has ever truly needed.
Wow. Okay. That's a statement.
It suggests it's capable of resolving conflicts from the smallest community level right up to the biggest global crises, even challenges beyond this planet.
So the underlying idea is that all these complex external problems, war, inequality, climate change, are ultimately symptoms of a failure in consciousness. A failure of aligned decision-making at the source.
That seems to be the core assertion, that the complexity isn't primarily in the external variables, but in our internal misalignment. If decisions globally were genuinely rooted in inner vision and heart-centered alignment.
The claim is these crises would naturally begin to resolve themselves, because the actions taken would be inherently coherent and life-affirming.
That's the profound implication. It's a claim that demands serious consideration and likely critical questioning about evidence.
What kind of evidence does the movement point to for such a sweeping claim? It defines itself as the future of governance, the future of Earth itself.
From the materials, the evidence seems primarily experiential and observational, the coherence and resilience observed in individuals and systems that adopt the framework. The argument appears to be that transforming the inner source is the necessary and sufficient condition for transforming the outer reality. The proof is in the practice and its effects.
Interesting. Okay, let's talk about the structure around this. It's not just a theory. It's linked to the awakened leadership movement.
Yes, and the source material is very specific about the nature of this movement.
It emphasizes what it isn't.
Exactly. It's described as a soul-born initiative and explicitly not a registered NGO, not a trust, not a foundation, not a company, not a commercial entity.
It stands.
Sovereign.
Sovereign, that's the word used, rooted entirely in its own inner clarity. It's pillar one.
That feels like a direct, real-world application of the framework itself, refusing external structures that might dilute the vision.
It's a living demonstration. By avoiding conventional institutionalization, the movement seeks to maintain the purity of its inner vision, free from the compromises that often come with donor requirements, political pressures, or regulatory frameworks.
But that must come at a cost, surely. Operating outside those established systems drastically limits conventional reach, funding, scalability. It's a paradox they seem to consciously embrace. The trade-off is coherence over conventional scale. The bet is that a smaller, deeply coherent force can have a more profound systemic impact than a larger, more compromised, misaligned one.
Integrity over influence, in a sense.
Or perhaps integrity as the source of true influence. It's a mission presented as an offering, not a commercial product.
And bridging the philosophical with the practical, there's the technology aspect. Sandeep Mehra also developed the Awakened Leadership Compass.
Yes, described as the first ever GPT tool built to carry awakened decision-making and systemic clarity into real time.
A GPT tool based on this framework. That's fascinating.
It's a really powerful conceptual integration. It says, okay, we can use the most advanced AI technology to help leaders navigate complexity, process data, explore scenarios.
But the tool itself is designed to reinforce the human element.
Precisely. The compass is architected to constantly filter the AI's outputs back through the coherence of the four pillars. It uses the machine to support human presence and integrity, not replace it.
It's like an anti-algorithm algorithm, ensuring the tech serves the alignment, not the other way around.
A tool to aid awakened choice, not automate unawakened action.
Finally, the sources bring in an emotional dimension. There's language about the world being like a wounded child, searching for life, needing healing, needing to move beyond faking and failure.
Yes, that emotional framing really underscores the why. It elevates the framework from just a better management technique to an urgent imperative for, well, for systemic healing.
It suggests the turbulence and dysfunction we see aren't just technical problems.
They're symptoms of deeper, unhealed collective wounds. And this calls for leaders to operate not just from intellect, but from a place of profound responsibility, truth, and presence. Moving beyond just performing leadership to actually being leaders grounded in these principles. So, wrapping up our deep dive today, it seems clear the awakened leadership framework presents a radical challenge to conventional thinking. In a world drowning in data but starved of clarity.
It argues the anchor has to be internal.
Exactly. It demands leaders cultivate this specific inner sequence. Vision first, then heart, then essence, finally materiality as the absolute foundation for any meaningful external action.
It's really a method for transforming that overwhelming noise into something actionable, responsible, and coherent.
Turning overload into presence.
And the power, for me, really seems to lie in that insistence on sequence. Get the origin right first. Define the truth, the vision, the heart before you define the strategy.
That focus on origin integrity is key.
And the pillars themselves, the colors, the specific functions they offer, a memorable, almost visceral map for moving from abstract ethics to tangible, grounded action. It reframes leadership entirely.
Less external performance, more internal practice.
Definitely. So let's leave you, our listeners, with a final thought to mull over, drawing from pillar two, that heart-centered alignment.
The green corridor of courage and peace.
Right. If the framework is right, and so much of our collective chaos stems from decisions born of fear, reactivity, external pressure, what's the first, maybe even tiny, decision you could make today?
In your own life, your work, your community.
What's one choice you could filter only through that lens of heart-centered alignment? What choice, perhaps, requires the most courage right now to be born truly of care, of love, of authenticity, rather than defaulting to fear or obligation?
Challenging question.
Because if this framework holds any truth, that subtle shift in the internal source of even one small decision, well, that might be where real systemic change actually begins.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.